So 1 John 4:10, herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son to be the propitiation of sins. In certain African cultures, you cannot accept the presence of another person or even acknowledge their existence until they have greeted you appropriately. Seeing you and inquiring after you and after your family, I often felt invisible in my younger years. However, at age 10, a substitute teacher changed this, Mr. Bothy. He showed me and my class the Jesus film, which raised some questions within me. Often my family had brushed aside my questions, saying they were too busy or indirectly telling me not to ask so many questions. This happened so often that I was reluctant to ask any more questions, and it didn't really make me feel valuable or that I was worth too much at all. Yet the movie bothered me, and I was inquisitive. So I worked up the courage to ask Mr. Bothy, why was the crowd so angry with Jesus prior to his crucifixion? For the first time in my life, an adult took the time to hear what I was saying and answered my questions in full. For the first time, I felt I was visible to someone. Mr. Bothy went on to say I was invisible to God as well, that I was not just visible, but thought about and designed for his purposes. Over the next few months, I asked more questions and discussions rose, and basically I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. 1 Corinthians 4:15 to 16. For even if you were to have 10,000 teachers to guide you in Christ, yet you would not have many fathers who led you to Christ and assume responsibility for you. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the good news of salvation. So I urge you to be imitators of me, just as a child imitates his father. Indeed, I wanted to imitate Mr. Bothy, helping others go from invisible to visible. Though that's where I remained for several years. While I had little ongoing discipling, I couldn't help but think that there was more to living life as a Christ follower.
Is there more to being a Christ follower? That's a thought that's rattled around in the minds of many of us involved in the Global Discipleship Program. I came across this quote from Billy Graham. It goes like this. Being a Christian is more than just an instantaneous conversion. It's a daily process whereby you grow to be more and more like Christ. Unfortunately, he didn't help me. It raised more questions than answers. Questions like, what does this journey to be a Christ follower look like? What do we need to get there? And what is the cost? Is it worth it? Let me try and Let me try and provide a bit of perspective for a couple of these questions, and then as the team shares, maybe you can decide as to whether it's worth it. In December of last year, the team and I found ourselves in Guinea, southern Guinea to be more specific, in Africa, and in particular the Hope Clinic. On this particular day, it was bright and sunny, and the ward that I had just entered was pretty dark. With the exception of a bright beam of light that shone from a high-intensity portable lamp. In the beam of light, I could see Dr. Abraham hunched over a patient's leg with a pair of tweezers. And he was picking away at the dead tissue of a large open sore. And every time he picked at the dead tissue, the patient, Mr. Cater, would wince and jerk in pain. You see, Mr. Cater had been working in the fields well over a year ago and had injured himself. And as tradition would dictate in that part of Africa, he treated it with a combination of mud and herbs. Unfortunately, the treatment didn't work. Infection set in. After a while, the infection began to spread through his leg. And not long after that, sores began to appear on his leg from between his hip to his ankle. The leg became pretty painful. Walking soon became unbearable, and so he decided to go visit the regional hospital. At the regional hospital, doctors took a look and said, sorry, we'll have to amputate your leg. Now, you need to understand that in this part of Africa, to receive such a dire prognosis is akin to a death sentence. You see, if you can't work the fields because of a disability, you can't put food on the table. If you can't put food on the table, you eventually starve and die. So here he was at the Hope Clinic. And every time Dr. Abraham used those tweezers to pick away at the dead tissue, I couldn't help but think of how God had been working in my life over the past few years, just picking away at the dead tissue of a sin in my life, revealing that healthy pink flesh, that telltale indicators of healing and rejuvenation. If that's what spiritual maturity looks like, I can't help but think, what's the flip side of it? Because me, personally, I'd like to avoid pain. And as I think about these things, I can't help but think of Hank. You see, Hank had kind of grown up in church, even as a kid. But now he had turned into a grumpy young man and was now a grumpy old man. His attitude had taken its toll over the years, and his wife had left him. The kids barely spoke to him. He had this incredible ability to find a dark cloud in anyone's silver lining. His latest bugbear was the fact that the music was too loud in church. So he complained to the pastor, the elders, the deacons, the regular church members, and God help anyone who walked through the church doors for the first time, he would chew their ear off about how loud the music was. A deacon once asked Hank, "Hank, are you happy?" Hank thought for a moment and said, yeah, I'm happy. Well, Hank, you should tell your face. You see, as far as anyone knows, Hank's face never got the message. Hank's attitude aside, what troubled me with this picture was the expectations that the church had of people, Hank included. It seemed to me as though if Hank were to come to church joyous, kind, gentler, the church would have been absolutely shocked by the change. But what if there was a different set of expectations? Because the expectations at the moment seem to be more like, well, come to church, attend a Bible study, pray, don't commit certain sins like don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't do drugs, and definitely don't smoke. But what if there were a different set of expectations? What if there were a different set of expectations of me? What would it look like if Christ's followers actually held me accountable each year to becoming more spirit-filled, joyous, gentler, kinder, more peaceful? I wonder what that would look like. I wondered if a group of Christ followers would commit to actually doing that together. And more importantly, what would that look like? You see, like Hank, I'm afraid that I too can develop spiritual cataracts. Now, if you're wondering what do I mean by spiritual cataracts, let me try and explain it as best as I can this way. In the 1940s, Paul White was a medical missionary working in what is now Tanzania, Africa. And on this particular day, he was traveling from one health post to another and had stopped by a stream to make some tiny repairs on his Land Rover. In the midst of those repairs, he couldn't help but notice that cattle had begun to cross the stream. And so he stood up, looking out for the cattle herder, who he knew couldn't be too far away. As he scanned the horizon, he could make out a figure in the distance running towards him, waving their arms above their heads. And as he watched the figure draw closer, he began to hear the person call out, "Doctor! Doctor!" And as the man drew even closer, he began to make out the person's facial features, and thinking that he recognized him, called out, "Mulewa! Mulewa, is that you?" The man had come pretty close now to the doctor and said, "No, it is I, Benjamin." "Benjamin," said the doctor. "Mulewa, isn't that you? Aren't you the person who was burnt, who couldn't see, and walked into fire? Whose wounds I treated, to whom I restored sight?" The man had now run up to the doctor and smiled and said, "I was Mulewa. But you see, doctor," and he reached up for a vial around his neck, took it off, uncorked it, emptied its contents into the open palm of the doctor's hand. It looked like shriveled up black dried peas. And he said, yes, you did heal my wounds. Yes, with your little knife, you did restore sight to my soul. Those are my cataracts. But you see, doctor, that is when I understood. I understood that Jesus had come to remove the cataract of my soul. I say, doctor, I think your little knife preaches better than your tongue. You see, for those of us in GDP, we've become quite aware of the fact that we are in danger of developing spiritual cataracts, and that we need to do something about removing the cataract of our soul. And so, as we've looked at this both from a biblical perspective as well as from my experience, we've found that there are five critical steps that we need to take in order to remove the cataracts of our soul.
Matthew 20:28. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. In the winter of 2016, a phrase was repeated to me over and over again, blessed to be a blessing. I was undertaking a four-day intensive course with the Global Discipleship Program, and by the end of the 4 days, blessed to be a blessing had been repeated to me so many times, it was well and truly drilled into my head. At this point, I really felt like I understood what blessed to be a blessing meant. And I even remember thinking to myself, okay, I think I've heard it enough times. But on the last day, we were given some time to reflect on the things we had learned. And this is when I had to ask myself, am I actually living out the phrase, blessed to be a blessing? It was great to learn lots of knowledge from the course, but when the time came to applying it into my life, it was difficult. And that's when I realized, wow, I wasn't living out blessed to be a blessing. In fact, I was a really selfish Christian. I called myself a Christ follower, yet the way I lived and the way I thought was really to serve myself. I wanted God to bless me and only bless me so that I could live a comfortable life. I only wanted the first part, to be blessed. I didn't want the second part, be a blessing. I didn't understand that what God actually wants is for me to use my time, energy, talents, resources, and all the blessings he's given me to serve and bless others. My heart was so sorry to God when I realized how selfish I was, and I had to ask him to change me because my heart needed serious changing from a selfish desire of what I wanted to a desire of what God wants instead. Ezekiel 11:19 writes, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. God convicted my heart of my sin. Everything I learnt went from my head to my heart. And when it reaches your heart, God begins to change you.
I was apprehensive and nervous. You see, the last place I expected to find myself was in an African man's prison. Yet there I was, in a 15 by 15 meter cage with a roof on top, standing with an African pastor, American missionary, and Vinay. I'd just been asked what I was doing in Mali and to share my testimony. I was afraid, as I've never been in front of such a crowd, and would what I say even hit home for them? Would it be just lost in translation? So I stood up and I explained that we had come from Australia and shared my testimony. I basically shared the unconditional love of God, which had forgiven me for my sins and restored a right relationship with God, caused me to come from Australia. And this same unconditional love was available for them, and that all they needed to do really was to ask. After sharing this, the pastor continued speaking in Bambara and invited anyone who wanted to respond to God's offer of having their sins forgiven through Jesus to raise their hand. Approximately 30 men raised their hand. Yes, it was a privilege to be able to share the love of Jesus with these people, as the words of John Snowden, former missionary to Senegal, and even SPs, speaking of times in Thailand, rang in my ears, take every opportunity you get to share the love of Jesus. You know, it's a good thing that we had the intent to go to Africa, but without the encouragement and journeying together with other folk on this road, just like an ember blown from a bushfire and quickly fades, so this good intention would have faded. Ecclesiastes 4:12 says, A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two core people standing back to back can conquer. Three are even better. A triple braided cord is not easily broken. Thankfully, we're doing this journey together with other people. Right now, this road leads to my workplace. My boss is a Muslim, and in what can be a secular and difficult place to witness, I found the courage and intentionality to be a witness, something that I was lacking before. Whether going to the other side of the world or into the workplace, the Global Discipleship Program has had a big hand to play in this, providing a structured plan that helps take a new or seasoned Christ follower on a journey that joins the dots individually and collectively through the learning and experiences in the most unexpected places in front of the most unexpected audiences.
I felt convicted after I had learned I am blessed to be a blessing, and so decided that I needed to intentionally follow through. But what do I do? Where do I start? It was at this time I heard about plans of a medical team going on a trip to Africa at a Global Discipleship Program meeting. Straight away, I was interested, but a small voice in my head was telling me, no, don't go. The voice is telling me, don't go yet, because first, you need to establish your career, get married, have children, buy a nice house, settle down, enjoy your life first, and then you can go. I felt as though it was my old self talking to me again, the selfish part of me, which was more concerned about my own comforts and desires. In fact, the decision for me to go on the trip felt a bit like a crossroad, where one path was to continue living the same way as before, and the other was to follow a different path. I was challenged in that moment because I was faced with a choice, Jesus or the comforts of this life. I was challenged to put into practice everything I had learned and to live it out. In Luke 9:23, it says, Jesus said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Only when we put to death our own plans and desires can we follow Jesus and go wherever he calls us.
In the Global Discipleship Program, one of the first things we tell people before they consider joining is that you need to be prepared to make sacrifices. You need to be willing to sacrifice time, money, energy, and relationships. That's hard for me because, like, as me and as all of you, family means the world to me. And I know that everything that I do, they will be there standing right beside me. They love me unconditionally and they will do anything to protect me from harm. So hearing this from them was expected. Ming, I don't want you to go out to Africa. I really don't. What if something bad happens? You know, what if you get kidnapped? I don't want you to go. Those words came out of my mum's mouth when we were having dinner one night. And my sisters, Padra and Mary, they looked at me and they said, Ming, we agree with mum. We don't want you to go. And I could see the fear and the anxiety just ooze out of my mum's mouth when she said those words. And I guess it was because, you know, the trip was leading up and the media doesn't really portray Africa as, you know, a safe country. And at the same time, after that, I felt guilty because I don't want my loved ones worrying about me. The ones you love will always have issues with letting you go to a foreign place that's considered dangerous. That was one of the challenges I faced while preparing for this trip. So, for example, while leading up on the trip, we were told of ISIS rebels infiltrating the area where our team were planning to go and volunteer at a hospital. There were stories of kidnapping and many foreign aid workers and missionaries having to relocate and immediately leave the place. But this time it was different. From the very moment I decided to go to Africa, I felt this overwhelming peace in my heart that this was the place where God wanted me to go. My friends, my family, and my co-workers would say, Ming, aren't you afraid? And I'd say, nope, I'm not afraid. Of course, I had thoughts of what could go wrong, but every time I thought of those thoughts, God would whisper to me and say, Ming, don't you trust me? You know, I had those thoughts, but I had this strong sense of peace in my heart where that's where God wanted me to go. And he had already paved the way for me, and I just had to be available and trust him and go. I think Elaine, an international worker in Mali, put it best. As she and her husband prepared to leave for Africa, their adult daughters asked, are you scared you might get killed over there? You know it's dangerous, right? She replied, God knows when your time is up on this earth. It doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, whether you're in a safe, comfortable environment or whether you're in a dangerous place. God knows when it's time for you to come home. He knows your beginning and your end. And how incredibly true when I heard those words, and how incredibly human of us not to trust God enough that he would not protect us. We forget that God is in charge of all things. In Romans chapter 8, verse 28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. In Psalms 143, verse 10, teach me to do your will, for you are my God. Let your good spirit lead me on level ground. It was the 20th of December 2017, and I, along with Adrian, had been invited to watch a thyroidectomy by Hope Clinic's resident surgeon, a place where major surgeries were performed for $55 or less. After donning scrubs and stepping into the OR, I looked around and noticed mold in the sink. I watched as staff used medical supplies that were expired and not very sterile. For me as a nurse manager at a practice that had just gained accreditation and having infection control drilled in my head at uni, well, it was a challenge to put it mildly. It was very, very difficult for me to watch things unfold before me and not be able to fix it. As a nurse, watching a patient go under general anaesthetic with their vital signs not within normal limits scared the heck out of me, because if they were to go under cardiac arrest, there wasn't much you could do. It was also hard for me as I faced the fact that people were willing to go to places with such desperate needs and do and make a difference with so little. I asked myself if I could do the same, and the answer was no. Did that make me a bad person? Confronted with the reality of what we were experiencing, I had two choices. Not involve myself with the staff, the hospital, or two, take a step forward and adapt, be patient and be willing to learn to their ways. I chose the latter. Why? Because I realised that the issue that bothered me most was that I would be forced to go to places and do things that I feared the most. Yet all that he was asking of me was whether I would submit to his ways and be willing to mould me as he saw fit. Job chapter 22, verse 21-22. Submit to God and be at peace with him. In this way, prosperity will come to you. Accept instruction from his mouth and lay up his words in your heart. So I gave it all up to him in the knowledge that I would be okay where he wanted me, and he would see me through it, whatever he decided was best for my life. I really had to put it all to Jesus, because in the end, that was where he wanted me to be at that time, in that moment, and I trusted him. It also helped to have the support of my teammates, who encouraged and supported me through this. For the past few years, GDP has helped me with my journey with Jesus. It's not all just about learning and applying it into my day-to-day life, but also applying it when I'm out on the mission field. It has allowed me to get a clearer sense of what God is doing here and in the world. Personally, it has allowed me to grow in ways I had not imagined and gain a better understanding of what my role in his plans are. Was it worth the travel, the expenses, the heartache, the sacrifices. It was definitely worth it. It challenged my life as a Christ follower because of the people I met along the way and their willingness and servant heart to sacrifice and drop the comfort of their life to follow God's will. This journey has helped define who I am, what my values are, and what my purpose in life is.
It was 1989. At the time, John was in his late 20s and a missionary in Liberia when he had just discovered the book, Operation World. For those who aren't familiar with the book, it contains the state of world evangelization, providing detailed statistics of the people and countries of the world. As John was in Liberia at the time, his natural inclination led him to look up Liberia, a country which he had discovered had far more mission agencies than most countries in the world, including its neighboring country, Guinea. Guinea had next to no missionaries other than the Christian and Missionary Alliance. With a civil war breaking out, John knew he had to move. And believing that God called him to reach the unreached, he decided to cross over to Guinea with the refugees and with just $12 in his pocket. Crossing over and seeing the enormous needs there, he found a like-minded person in a local Ghanaian man named Moses. John stayed with Moses' family in the small village of Nzao, and in the process got an insider's perspective of life in that part of Africa. One of the biggest needs he saw was basic healthcare. The lack of medical facilities resulted in hundreds of people in and around the village dying from preventable diseases and health complications such as malaria, cholera, and childbirth. But how does one go about starting a clinic in a small village in Guinea, one of the world's poorest countries? With no medical background between the two of them, it took earnest prayer, faith, complete trust, and obedience to God to make it happen. Almost 20 years later, the dream is now a reality, and that today that clinic is known as Hope Clinic, which, as we got to see, literally brings hope in more ways than just physical healing to the people who are suffering there and need God just as much as we do. The story of Hope Clinic is a powerful example that it is not our abilities that qualify us for God's work. Neither John or Moses were doctors. In fact, neither of them had any medical background. Yet God still used them for his purposes because of their willingness to trust him and obey him. In the words of Ahat, one of the missionary workers at Hope Clinic, she says, "God does not look at how able we are, but rather how available we are to him." Going to Africa was hard, dangerous, expensive, involved sacrifice of time, energy, money, and relationships. However, I think I can safely say that we have never felt more at peace and in the center of his will by following through on his call. In a church in Bamako, Mali, the district president of the CMA greeted us with surprise and astonishment when we told him we had willingly come all the way from Australia. Just to let you know, it takes 40 hours to travel from Australia to Africa. So it came as a surprise when he said, "No one ever comes from other parts of the world other than a handful of Americans and Europeans." He said, "People hear things on the news and think it's too risky to be coming or that it's not worth visiting. But we, the church, aren't dead yet." You see, the people of Mali and Guinea need God. In this desert-like region of the world, they need the living water he offers. So to finish, let me ask you this. Are you willing to follow God into places you have never been or even heard of? It may or may not be Africa. In fact, it could be a lot closer than you think, your workplace, a neighbor's home. But this is the heartbeat of God's call. Even if we don't know exactly where or what, God asks only one thing, our willingness, a heart of surrender to him. It is easy to justify not being involved, but as we heard from the story of Hope Clinic, God can do some pretty amazing things if we are willing to follow him anywhere. And would you be willing to empower and pray for those of us who are willing to go and live out our calling? If your answer is yes to any of those, or if you'd like to pray on this, do come let us know. We would love to pray with you and journey with you as we reach the unreached and play a small part in his kingdom work. As you think about this, we will have a video playing.